Good day, and welcome to the ASR conference call on the acquisition of Loyalis. Today's call is being recorded, and at this time, I would like to turn the call over to Michel Hülters. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the ASR conference call on the acquisition of Loyalis that we announced earlier this morning. On the call are Jos Baeten, CEO, and Chris Figee, CFO, and they will talk you through the transaction highlights from a strategic rationale and the financial metrics. Jos will kick it off. After that, we'll open up for Q&A. As is customary, please review the disclaimer that we have in the back of the presentation, as well as any forward-looking statements that we have. With that, Jos, all yours.
Thank you, Michel, and good morning, everybody. I'm sure you all have seen the announcement this morning, so let's not waste too much time. I'll briefly mention the highlights of the transaction before we take any questions you may have. As you can understand, we are very pleased to announce this transaction so shortly after our CMD of the 10th of October, in which we detailed our plan to actively pursue profitable and inorganic growth next to the normal organic growth, especially aiming for bolt-on acquisitions in the SME space. I believe we have been able to present an offer that, beyond an attractive financial package, also resonated well with our strategic principle of putting clients first. This transaction truly ticks all the relevant boxes, and we'll discuss that during the Q&A from a strategic point of view as well as financially. With Loyalis, we significantly strengthen our position in the disability market. We gain unique access to an important cluster of customer groups and expand the product offering. In disability, we grow our market share to 28%. In life, the acquisition fits very well with our strategy to consolidate service books. We can unlock the synergies by rationalizing and migrating these books to the software as a service platform, what we already have. As you can see on this slide, the transaction that comfortably meets the financial criteria we maintain for M&A and demonstrates our ability to deploy capital to enhance the value of the organization. Pro forma impact on Solvency II ratio of ASR at closing is -9 solvency points, so equal to the Generali transaction. And when the integration work is successfully done in 2022, the impact is -8 solvency points. Return on investment is expected at well above 12% on all metrics. This is calculated on a fungible capital investment of roughly 200 million. The transaction is expected to contribute 40 million to the net operating result and 35 million organic capital creation in 2022. This represents an EPS accretion of more than 8% based on our last full year results in 2017. Transaction will temporarily be financed with a short-dated bridge loan, so ASR maintains a very strong financial flexibility. The financial leverage of ASR will, due to this transaction, increase to roughly 29%, well below our target of maximum of 35%. This short-term financing basically means that we keep our options open for developments in other strategic areas going forward. So let's move to the next slide, where I will provide an overview about Loyalis. As you may know, Loyalis is an insurance company currently owned by APG and is located in Heerlen, a town in the south of the Netherlands. It employs roughly 300 employees. Loyalis is mainly a non-life company with 161 gross written premium in non-life and 105 of gross written premium in life. The IFRS earnings of Loyalis were 71 million in 2017. There are some differences in accounting standards. Loyalis, for instance, applies fair value accounting where market movements, including interest, flow through. Therefore, this is not a number you should expect going forward. Estimated standalone run rate of the net operating earnings is approximately 30 million, and this is based on ASR's accounting standards. Loyalis' balance sheet is just above 3.3 billion and is fairly well capitalized with strong Solvency II ratios for the operating companies. Important to note is that Loyalis carries no debt. The cooperation between Loyalis and APG will be continued and is covered under long-term agreements with APG. The cooperation pertains to knowledge sharing on the sector, which enables Loyalis to develop insurance products in the future and will remain closely related to the collective labor agreements of the sectors Loyalis and APG currently serve. So, let's have a closer look at disability and life, starting with disability. Loyalis strengthens ASR competitive position in sustainable employability segments as it offers a broad portfolio of disability products with a strong emphasis on RIA, accounting for 68% of gross written premium in 2017. Out of the total earnings of Loyalis, 80% is in a non-life predictable earnings stream. With Loyalis, we also will have meaningful access to new customer groups, government and education, offering the opportunities for ASR's disability suite. Complementary to ASR's strong position in the disability market, particularly for individuals and small companies, is Loyalis' strong presence in the area of mid to larger sized corporates with over 100 employees. Our objective is to safeguard the current profitable proposition. To do so, we aim to continue running the business from Heerlen. As such, it will be only a partial integration of staff functions and IT rationalization. The relation with APG on knowledge sharing, product development and efficient client solutions will continue. We will keep the Loyalis brand intact, being well recognized in the sector they service. As you can see, there is also a relatively small absenteeism portfolio which will be managed as a closed book, and now future offering will come via the ASR product line. Turning to life, this part will be fully integrated into ASR's platform in Utrecht. Migration expected mid-2020. As mentioned, this fits very well with our strategy to consolidate the individual life market, and here we can actually lever our proven integration and migration skills and experience. Loyalis adds scale to our existing service books and increases the cost coverage. Also, we will manage the 2 billion investment portfolio in life. Let's move to slide 5, and for those who attended our CMD in October, this is a familiar slide. It depicts how we look at the various players and roles around sustainable employability. It is an entire ecosystem in which we have a strong and unique position with the various entities that we either fully or partially own, or with companies which we work closely together. With Loyalis, we strengthen our position in underwriting and targeting significant clusters of customers with products that meet their needs. This ecosystem will continue to develop, and I would expect us to continue to our aim to further expand this in the future. As is shown on the right-hand side, Loyalis will increase our market share to 28% and become co-leader in the disability market. So now turning to the impact on Solvency II. That's slide 6. As you can see, the pro forma impact on Solvency II, when all capital and cost synergies are taken into account, amounts roughly 8 points. I will briefly run you through the major changes. Day 1 pro forma solvency impact is 9 points, and this consists of the purchase price. As you have read, this is 450 million cash out, partially offset by capital synergies, which includes diversification and eligible capital, as well as the alignment of assumptions and the impact of combining the businesses. Given the fact that Loyalis already has a very strong balance sheet, the impact of the latter is close to zero. At legal merger, the impact is -1 point, reflecting the remaining capital synergies and further alignment of assumptions. After the legal merger, we will pursue to realize cost synergies, which are expected to increase the Solvency II ratio with 2 points. This number includes the capitalized cost benefits and is partially offset by non-recurring restructuring expenses. When determining the return on this transaction, we look at the amount of capital which is required based on ASR Solvency II level above the dividend threshold for the operating companies. Fungible capital deployment amounts to 200 million. This number takes into account the capitalized cost synergies we expect to realize. Excluding these capitalized cost synergies, the fungible capital investment amounts up to 260 million. Now, let's turn to a snapshot of the financial metrics on this transaction. And that's on slide 7. The acquisition of Loyalis is expected to deliver a return on investment of well over 12% based on operational and capital synergies. Loyalis is expected to contribute 40 million to the net operating result as from 2022, after realizing all the cost synergies. Loyalis is expected to contribute 35 million to the OCC to be realized in 2022. I'm sure you will understand we are very, very pleased with this acquisition. Not do only all the financials ticks the boxes, but also this acquisition is in the core of our strategy. Having said this, I would like to conclude this presentation and let's go over to Q&A.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star or asterisk key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. And if you find your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. And we will pause for just a moment to allow everyone to signal. We will now take our first question. This comes from Cor Lewis from ABN AMRO. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Cor Lewis, ABN AMRO. Congratulations with this acquisition.
It's midnight for you, I believe.
That's correct. But no problem. I've got a question about the difference between the 450 and the 200 million euros. Could you help us a little bit more with the pieces between? We see the slide on 6, of course, but could you give a little bit more granularity on like the T piece, which probably is not at the Loyalis excess capital, which you see there, assumption alignments, where you're a little bit more conservative than they are. So a little bit more granularity for that gap between those two figures. And my second question is about the APG contract. You talk about a long-term contract. Could you elaborate a little bit more on how that works? How long can you contact new APG clients, or do you put them on their website, or how does that work? My last question is about the OCC. Which piece, the 35 million, which piece is capital release, SCR effect, because I think the life book is shrinking somewhat there, so to what extent is that included in that, and probably the disability piece is growing, so that consumes probably somewhat. So the primary questions.
Very good, Cor. Good morning, it's Chris. I'll take your question on the capital spend. There's a couple of points to note. This is a business that is well capitalized. If you look at the own funds that are present in the two operating entities, Loyalis Leven, Loyalis Schade, and you're excluding any adjustments we may or may not make, but as it is today, the own funds in this business are 560 million. So you could argue we're paying 460 million for 560 million of own funds. Now, that's of course face value, there will be some adjustments, but it shows you that these businesses are well capitalized, running at solvency levels of standalone 172 in Loyalis Schade, 175 in Loyalis Life. That's one. Second thing, what I like about this business, we're buying effectively, you know, a normalized earnings business. If you look at the profit of this business, and also especially on ASR accounting standards, ASR, 80% of the profit of this business is normalized. So it's a normalized earnings stream. So we're acquiring own funds with a very limited UFR or VA sensitivity. You know, as I said, the own funds of the new business are 560. If you took out the UFR and the VA as a whole, that would drop to 520. But before any adjustment. So we're looking at a business with a significant amount of capital in there, which have limited UFR VA sensitivity. So then the walk from the 450 to 200 is, you know, we pay cash out 450 at this point. In our assessment, there's 100 million of what I call fungible capital we acquire. You could say we're paying a euro for a euro, but as this capital is in this business based on our own dividends and our capital management ladder. So we're paying 450 million for 100 million of additional fungible capital. So it's a euro in for a euro out. Then there's about 90 million, 90, of net capital synergies. They consist of diversification benefits, a DTA, and I'll elaborate more, but those are the main components. That brings you to 260 million of spend of capital. And then there's about 60 million of capitalized cost benefits in solvency, so lower expense charges in your Solvency II, which bring you to the 200. So the bridge up is 450 minus 100 minus 90, brings it to 260, and take out 60 to get to 200. In those capital synergies, as I said, the dominant one is diversification benefits. And disability is a risk factor that naturally diversifies very well in an existing insurance book. Next to mortality is the second best diversifier in your risk base. And effectively, 20% of this business is mortality and 80% is disability. Secondly, there's an ineligible DTA on the Loyalis balance sheet that will become eligible at our side. And then there are, you know, a few smaller ones where on the negative side we'll have some adjustment on there on the mortality assumptions in the Loyalis book, where we have a slightly different approach on, you know, quantifying and reserving for mortality risks. The small negative from dealing with profit sharing, where we don't follow their methodology yet on how you account for profit sharing and the quite specific loss absorbing capacity of technical provisions like TP in your solvency, which we don't apply yet. And then there is a small amendment on the interest rate risk charge and a small positive on further synergies in disability solvency. So in summary, diversification and DTA are the main drivers. Then small adjustment, a number of adjustments for mortality and profit sharing. Those are the negatives, the actuarial assumption alignments, and then the number of positives, mostly around reserving and treatment of disability expenses. But the core thing to us is that you would pay 450 for a business with north of 500 million own funds. XVA, XUFR, still north of 500 million own funds. So we take out some 100 million of where we're paying a euro for a euro. That brings you to 350, take out 90 of clear capital synergies that will be there already actually on very quickly within the first 6 months. And then there's about 60 million of opportunity on reserving, which will show up if and when we complete the integration. So that will take a bit more time, but we've got confidence that we will deliver on those.
And on the contract...
Sorry, Cory, go ahead.
And on the contract... We aim that it will be an indefinite contract. However, we have agreed that we, every 5 years, will evaluate how the collaboration works. So after 5 years, we have the first evaluation of how we have worked together over the last 5 years, and then aim at continuation of the contract going further. The aim of the contract is to keep on offering the current product suite of Loyalis under the Loyalis brand, which mainly is VIA business. As said, 86% of their non-life portfolio is in VIA business. and there is a small sickness leave portfolio involved also, but they are not currently offering active sickness leave. We have agreed that we will be able to build on their current customer portfolio and offer also other ASR's products. So for example, they don't offer any sickness leave today. We could decide to start on offering sickness leave and all kinds of other additional products too. So going forward, it is keeping the current products in place and adding new products that are not offered yet by Loyalis. And all the non-life business runs at a very profitable combined ratio. If we would apply our own way of calculating the combined ratio, their combined ratio is already in the target level of ASR's combined ratio for disability, so in the very low 90s and sometimes even below 90. So having said that, keep the business in place. That's what we have arranged with the contract, and extend the business going forward.
Cor, and to your question on the OCC, what's in there, as I said, this is 80% a non-life business. The profit in 2017 was 71 million, but that's on fair value accounting, which we don't apply. So the numbers in 2017, when spreads narrowed, kind of overstate, especially the life earnings, when you compare to our accounting standards. On our standards, it's 80% non-life profit and about 20% life profit. And also shows up in the OCC. So the OCC really is all about underwriting results and new business results in the non-life business. Think about, you know, risk margin release of, say, 2 to 4 million in the first year, SCR release of 3 to 4 million in the first year, so about, you know, 5 to 7 million of capital release, and the remainder is kind of old-fashioned insurance business and returns. Over time, you can see the risk margin to decline gradually from 4 to around 2 million in 2022, and the SCR release will also be around 3 million. Please note that in the OCC assumption, it also assumes a reasonable amount of new business, so the capital release is actually netted, which gives you about, you know, 2 to 4 million of net contribution from risk margin and SCR release in the long run. If we were to stop writing new business, which in the long run is not a good idea, but if we were to do that, then the OCC would jump by another 5 million. But I think the key point to make is that out of, say, the 30 or 35 million of capital release of OCC we're seeing in 2021, only up to 5 is really book release, and the other 30 is underwriting business and returns.
Okay, no, wonderful. Thank you. Thank you very much, Victor.
Thank you. And we now move on to our next question, and this comes from Farooq Hanif from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi there. I hope you can hear me. I'm calling from home. Just on two questions. Firstly, on the debt, the short-term debt that you raised, what is your intention there? So if you need to fund another deal, what would you convert that into? And if you find you don't need to fund another deal, what are you going to do in terms of like kind of long-term leverage? That's question one. And second question is on some of the things you haven't talked about, so the uplift from, you know, looking at their investment portfolio and the uplift from cross-selling other products that are not currently on the suite, what kind of case study can you show us in the past that might be relevant here in the potential uplift? Thank you.
So, it's Chris. First of all, congratulations. When I dial in from home, you hear dogs barking, kids screaming, so well done on keeping your house under control. well done on leading the chart there. On the debt side, look, we think this business lends itself very well for hybrid financing. I mean, it's a 450 million cash out, acquiring a stable and predictable, you know, non-life earnings stream with, you know, long-term client relationships and a good combined. So this thing smells, breathes, eats hybrid financing. and we will hybrid finance this transaction in the long run. However, the instrument itself, the choice of instrument, is something that hinges a bit on other M&A files that are out there. Now, I don't want to have a call on other files, but please know that if Loyalis would be the last acquisition we do, this thing would be financed with a Tier 2 instrument. Hybrid capital keeps the solvency stable at the lowest cost possible. However, if you take into account that there are potential other transactions out there that may or may not start, that we may or may not buy, and who knows, but it might be the case in other transactions you'd rather use a Tier 1 financing to protect your Tier 3, headroom, protect your Tier 3 space. In a year from now, we will know better, or we'll know what the optimal financing against this strategy is. Will we use a Tier 2, which you take on a standalone basis, or would you rather issue a Tier 1 instrument, which may make sense if you include other transactions out there? So with that in mind, we said, look, we will do this with a hybrid financing, so our solvency will be stable against this transaction. However, the instrument itself, it's fair to choose, better to choose in a year from now than to choose today in order to protect and preserve optionality. With that in mind, we are going for short-term financing, a one-year financing. Options there could be either a public, a one-year senior in the capital markets, or a bridge financing with a bank. We have until closing to do that. I think hypothesis is that a bridge financing with a bank is slightly more, offers more flexibility in the space, because flexibility is what we're looking for, and the cost of financing today are relatively low. Most banks have fair amount of liquidity and are willing to extend short-term credit at attractive rates. So our view is, one, solvency of this deal will be unchanged because we will fund this with hybrid inside the leverage ratio that we have. However, it's not wise to choose today which instrument it is to, and so preserve optionality. Take 1 year loan out at a very low rate. The option doesn't cost a lot these days, and that actually provides time and room to pick the final instrument when we're there.
Just to interrupt, I hope you don't mind. When you say solvency will be neutral, I mean actually it will go up. When so if you raised tier two or tier one, you'd add 450 to your own funds. Basically, that's what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So the 450 out will be matched by at least the 450 cash inflow. You know, for example, tier two is going benchmark size of 500 million. So you'd expect if you issue a tier two bond, you'd issue a 500 million tier two bond, which nearly perfectly matches the cash out on this.
Okay.
So, and on tier one, there's a little bit more, a little bit less evidence of what a benchmark tier one bond is, but it's probably in the same order of magnitude. So the own funds out will be matched the own funds in from a hybrid issuance.
Okay.
And to the other point, uplift on the investment portfolio, it could be a small uplift in there. It's not in the numbers yet. Their portfolio bears a reasonable amount of asset risk. It's slightly less yieldy than our portfolio. There's some room to add mortgages and real estate. If you compare the Loyalis investment portfolio to ours, the upside is not in the numbers at this point in time. Similar to Generali, we think that re-risking an asset book is never the key reason to do a deal or to justify doing a transaction. So the ROIs that you see are solely based on operating and underwriting synergies. Re-risking itself is the icing on the cake, which should not justify the case. So also, you're looking at relatively single-digit numbers. If you look at the asset base and what you can do, there's a couple of million we could add probably, but that's not going to move the dial. And in terms of cross-sell, something similar, we can see opportunities for cross-sell, but we haven't quantified them yet. Maybe Jos, you can elaborate on those.
Yeah, I would say, as very conservative, so we haven't assumed any top-line cross-sell assumptions going forward. Between signing and closing, we will start developing plans with the management team on what the product demand from their customers is, which we can add. But for the time being, we have said, let's assume no further additional growth to justify the business case. So the business case is based on the current product suite without any future cross-sell involved.
Okay, that's very clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Can we move on now to our next question, which comes from Robin Vandenberg from Mediobanca. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Good morning, gentlemen. Congratulations on the deal. My first question is on what kind of cost of financing have you assumed in the $35 million of OCC you've guided for? That will be question one. The second one is on you lean back on the 140% Solvency II ratio. I think that was also the rebase you used in the Generali Netherlands deal. And I was just wondering, this doesn't really talk about the quality of capital. Loyalis clearly has no debt on the balance sheet, so that 140 for them is a lot better than it would be for potentially other assets. So I was just wondering if you could explain to us how your rebalancing act on the capital position works if there would be more leverage in place. And then the last question is on whether this deal makes you come closer to a potential internal model validation process. Thank you.
Robin, I will ask the first question and need a little more clarification on the second question. So in the first question, we assumed a small couple of million cash out for the funding. I mean, if you look at the bank loan work at the all-in funding for a one-year bank loan, including commitment fee, renewal fees, interest rate fees, it's probably up to 70 basis points. That's probably reasonably rich. I mean, the negotiations haven't been closed, so we were not done there yet. So if you look about 2 to 3 million of financing cost in the OCC in the first year. For latter years, we have not yet included those because that depends on the transactions final deal we will make. But in principle, it's about 2 to 3 million in the first year. And the second question, well, I'll think of your third one. Will this bring us close to an internal model? A tiny step, but not the final step, so to speak. So it adds a 3 billion AUM portfolio to our assets. The re-risking will be done in areas of mortgages and real estate that, to some extent, are less affected. Well, the mortgage less affected by the internal model. Real estate a bit more. Internal model helps, but this is not moving the dial or making the final call on requiring internal model for this deal to work. This deal works standalone with or without an internal model. And your second question. Could you elaborate? Because I can talk about
I mean, Loyalis, basically all the own funds is unrestricted tier one. If you would look at, I guess the big elephant in the room here is VIVAT, then you have a lot more air tier one and tier two capital in there as well. If you then would do a rebase of capital towards 140%, you could even argue that, VIVAT has excess capital. So I was just wondering how leverage basically is affecting that excess capital within this within these M&A frameworks.
I think let's keep this call to Loyalis, not hypothesize or speculate on other files that may or may not come. On the Loyalis situation, look, this business is actually fully debt-free. And what I find very important is not so much the amount of leverage, but also the sensitivity about the VA and U of R. Loyalis, our estimate, if you exclude the UFR, exclude the VA, it would still have, for example, a life solvency north of 140. I think our estimate of Loyalis life solvency ex UFR ex VA is 149, and in P&C, it would still be around the 170 mark. So I think at this point, we think it's fair to assume that for this transaction, which is a non-life business, not sensitive to UFR, not sensitive to VA, that our existing management letter is fully consistent and could be applied in this case. And in essence, I'm more looking at sensitivity to assumptions, mostly UFR and VA, to assess the 140 level of dividends. If you would buy somebody else with different level situations, we may want to revisit it. But, you know, in the previous transaction, both Generali and both Loyalis, business without leverage, and with very limited UFR VA sensitivity, we think the 140 makes perfect sense. Although, by the way, if you were to run the number at, say, 160, that means our capital commitment, the fungible capital, would be roughly 60 million higher. So we did do the test. What if we did not define fungibility on 140%, but on 160%, the 200s ultimate capital commitment would become 260, and, you know, divide 40 by 260, the deal still holds. So even if you do the transaction, the numbers on a 160 basis, you'd still be north of 12% ROI. And secondly, you still are north of, you know, beating, for example, spending the same amount of capital on buying back our own shares. So in short summary, we talk about Loyalis only. Sensitivity to UFR and VA is more important than leverage at this point in time. The 140 holds for us, holds for them, holds for Generali, but also at 160, you know, the deal still washes its face.
Thanks for that, Chris. I agree with you, by the way.
Thank you. We'll move on to our next question, and this comes from Albert Fleur from ING Bank. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Yeah, two questions from my side. First one is maybe on the customer base currently of the Loyalis, the 450K I think that was mentioned. What percent is that basically what you would call a civil servant? And because I guess Loyalis is also opening up to, let's say, other customer base as well. And you mentioned retention rates are still high. Can you give a bit more color what they are and what the trend has been in recent years, as far as you have, to, of course, that that information? And the second question is a bit related to the cost synergy potential of the 10-15 million, and let's say the guided of OCC and net operating result of 35-40 million, where you put a year 2022, of course, still some years away. So can you maybe give a bit more color on the phasing of that? I guess it's a bit back end loaded due to the let's say consolidation of the life portfolios. A bit more color would be helpful there. Thank you.
To your first question, roughly 80% is in the area of universities, schools, and civil servants of the portfolio, mainly disability portfolio, and 20% is in the area of large corporate institutions, like, for example, some hospitals. So hopefully that answers your first question, and that's the area where we aim at further growth going forward. But what is not yet included in the deal specifics and in the financials. And Chris?
Yes, on the synergies, Albert. Think about, there will be already in the initial set of synergies in 2019. Mainly around the asset management space, where in-house, the asset management today is done by APG. We'll bring back the asset management to our own business, and that is, of course, highly scalable activities. Secondly, there are some cost allocations, some services provided by APG to Loyalis that we'll deliver from ASR. So in that sense, there will be some savings only in year one. Think about something like up to 5 million in 2019. That will move to around 8 million in 2020. When we think around 2021, you're pretty close to the run rate of up to 50 million synergies. So in the first year, it's savings on services provided by APG that ASR will take on board with very limited additional cost. And then the further cost savings will commence in 2020 and mostly 2021. But by 21, you'll be looking at, you know, close to the 50 million run rate synergies.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you. We now move on to our next question, and this comes from Stephen Haywood from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and good morning. Just to clarify on one point earlier, you mentioned about a low 90s combined ratio. Could you be a bit more specific on that combined ratio, whether that's been achieved or whether that's sort of the forecast you expect to get from Loyalis? And then secondly, on your service book consolidation process, can you remind me of where we are, particularly with regards to your internal books, your Generali Netherlands book, and then where the Loyalis book will come into the sort of consolidation process here? And then finally, is there any chance you can give us a ASR standalone Solvency II ratio or sort of guidance towards what it should be for the end of Q3 or even for the end of November? Thank you.
Hi, Stephen, this is Jos. On the combined ratio, we recalculated their combined ratio based on our way of calculating the combined ratio, and they have been in the space between 85 and 90. So if I say low 90, I actually mean it's 90 or even a bit lower. And that's within the target range of our own disability targets going forward, being between 92 and 94. So this perfectly fits in our disability targets going forward, and we don't have to do a lot of repairing on that, like we had to do in the non-life business of Generali, for example, where the combined was above 100. So it's a healthy portfolio. On your second question, Stephen, where are we in the integration of the different individual life books? We have finalized all the own books except one. There was actually an outsourced book to India. We're now considering whether we should insource that again and bring it over to our own software as a service platform. Even when we decide to do so, then it will be done half 2019, so half of next year. Also, the Generali integration will be finalized somewhere in the second or third quarter next year. So if we take 3 to 4 months for closing the transaction of Loyalis, preparing the integration of the Loyalis book, we will be able to start the integration of the Loyalis book as from the end of 2019 and finalize it, as said in my introduction, in 2020.
And to your question, Stephen, on solvency for Q3, well, we don't disclose solvency on a quarterly level, so let's not go into there, but the numbers you can see on the pack work on the pro forma half-year numbers. Without disclosing too much, I think you'd be very safe to work with these numbers as a basis.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We will now move on to our next question, and this comes from Bart Norris from Degroof Petercam. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my questions. Only one strategic-like, and another one's a little bit details. So first, on the life offer of Loyalis, is there any unit linked, any DC in there, or should we just see this as additional service books that will be run off? And how is the maturity hedging of the liabilities regarding the reserves? Talking about reserves, there are 3.4 billion, while in the press release you're talking about asset managers of 3.1 billion. Could you explain the difference? And then finally, probably on the cost savings, there will be some restructuring charges. So what is the amount and the timing of these? Thank you.
Bart, could you please repeat your first question, because we were already that was on
on the life portfolio.
On the life portfolio. Yeah. We have looked into the life portfolio. There is a very small amount of unit life policies involved. Hardly any legal cases on them, and they have delivered on all the agreements that were made with the government and with AFM to deliver on compensation. So from a risk profile of the transaction, our judgment is that we are not onboarding additional risk on the unit line, on the unit linked file. And then on the difference between the 3.1 billion and the 3.3 billion, the 3.1 is the assets we are going to manage ourselves. And if you look at their balance sheet, there is some liquidity. And the difference between the 3.1 and 3.3 is mainly liquidity.
Okay. Books, maturity hedged, liabilities, assets?
So, like, it's Chris. We have a slightly different hedging profile. I think the existing hedging profile by Loyalis is more aimed at protecting the IFRS balance sheet and less on Solvency II, because they run an IFRS mark-to-market balance sheet. So their hedging strategy is slightly different from ours. What's relevant is our strategy will, once we control the business, move it into our interest rate hedging policy, which effectively is a combination of duration and maturity hedge. We try to be as much as possible cash matched in terms of our duration. But you know, effectively there will be some, you know, practicalities that not always require you to completely you'll be cash matched, especially for long dated deals. But fair to say that the relatively short maturity book of Loyalis will be, when it comes in our balance sheet, predominantly be cash and maturity hedge.
And then the cost of all this integration and restructuring?
Okay.
On the timing, we assume that all the integration is done in end of, most will be done end of 2020, and will, on the cost, and the results will kick in as from 2021, and on the cost we haven't yet disclosed an exact number, but given our experiences in integrations, you can assume that the numbers we have presented, and those already include the integration cost, that they are fairly conservative.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Again, ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, it is star one to ask the question, and we will now take our next question from Benoit Petrarque from Kepler. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Just one on the combined ratio on my side. Could you talk about the cross-cycle combined ratio for the business? Obviously, you know, civil service is not a business you know well, typically. So just wondering how is the behavior in terms of combined ratio to the cycle, also in more difficult phase in the cycle, what you have seen in the books. And linked to that, is the 85-90% a kind of average cost of the cycle, or the kind of current level you expect in the current cycle? Thanks.
Thank you, Benoit. Over time, we have seen a relative stable development of the combined ratio over the last, by heart, over the last 5 years at least, which has been consistently based on our way of calculating the combined ratio between 85 and 90. So it's a very healthy and stable portfolio going forward. And that's what we assume that we are able to continue to deliver going forward.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll move on to our next question, and this comes from Robin Vandenberg from Mediobanca. Please go ahead.
Sorry to come back on the cost of financing question I asked before, but Chris, if I understand your reasoning during the call correctly, you indicate that Tier 2 financing would be the most logical way to deal with Loyalis. I think your Tier 2 debt currently has a yield of 4%, and when I asked the question what's baked into that 35 million of OCC, you seem to imply that that's not 4% of the potential financing, which would be roughly, you know, probably more than half of the 35 million if you pay 4% on the 500 million. So am I seeing something wrong here, or could you elaborate a little bit?
To some extent, yes. To some extent, no. Indeed, we've baked in the 1 year funding cost in the OCC. Going forward, the new round we haven't. At the same time, if you were to raise another 500 million of hybrids, that would probably, you know, change the asset allocation of the business somewhat, because that would mean you'd have more capital spent on the risks of the side. So today we keep the asset mix as it is, and that's why we're spending 9 points of solvency on this. If you were to fund it with a Tier 2 hybrid, which for example could cost you 4 million, you'd have say, 500 million of capital that you could also spend, you know, supporting a further market risk allocation, that would then also be added to the OCC. So if you do the OCC numbers correctly, you take out some funding costs, but you add more market risk income at that time because you have more 500 million of more capital in your base. In today's situation, we spend 8% of solvency points, but we keep the existing investment portfolio. So both sides are not increasing.
And you would assume that those sectors basically cancel out against each other, if I understand your reasoning correctly. Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. As there are no further questions, I will now hand the call back to Joost Farten for any additional remarks.
So thanks for attending this call. As you can imagine, we're very happy with this transaction. Hopefully we have clarified some of the questions that we got all already this morning when we announced the transaction. We think from a strategic perspective, but also from a financial perspective, this is a very, very value-creative transaction which perfectly fits in our strategy to build an ecosystem in the area of disability. As you may expect from us, we will deliver on the integration targets that we have set, and also we will deliver on the timeline. So this concludes, from our perspective, our call. And thank you for attending, and for those attending, one of our colleagues in the U.S., have a great day in the U.S. The next week. Thank you very much.
That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.